In September 1995, nearly 500 Liverpool dockers were sacked. Their fight for reinstatement has become one of the most important industrial disputes in Britain. Yet it is scarcely reported, is largely ignored by politicians, and is not officially recognised by the unions.
Every day, dock workers gather at the main entrance to the port of Liverpool. These are the men who were dismissed over a year ago for refusing to cross a picket line. The majority are men with a long experience of the docks, maybe 30 or even 40 years. Now they're locked out, while their work is being done by non-union, casual labour. What began as a small incident that could have been sorted out has turned into the age-old struggle between employers who want to hire and fire as they think fit, and workers who want security for themselves and their families.
Every working man's got to have good paying conditions, and if you don't stand up for yourself, and if the trade unions don't back the members, you don't get good paying conditions, and therefore you don't get a good standard of living. The most important thing in any job is the rate for the job. And once you lose the rate for the job and let agencies take over, you're finished. Then you know, your boss start killing each other for work.
The major thing for us is that if we lose, then not only have we got no future, but neither of our children and our children's children. Something we've got to win.
The story of the dockers is the story of a struggle for regular work, regular hours and regular pay. Everyone has a fear of going back to the bad old days. Until 1967, they would be hired by the day, picked out by the foreman and supervisors who walked among them as they waited in pens or on the cobblestones.
We used to actually go into pens, as we call them, labour controls, and you were hired by a ship's foreman or a berth superintendent. And you were hired at the whim of that superintendent or ship's foreman if he didn't like your face, if he didn't like your religion. So if the hand never went on your shoulder first thing in the morning at 8 o'clock, there was no work for you. You were sent home and you had to report back at 1 o'clock. Prefer that hire.
And your dad used to go to work, and you'd hear your mum saying, your dad might be lucky today because Ernie Roberts up the road is the ship's boss and he might get picked.
Now, it was a disgrace and obnoxious way of employing people, because now you're standing on a big hall, say, which is the pen, and as someone comes up, she taps you on the back, you know, to say that you're going to such and such a ship. It's always obnoxious.
Well, you're all in the pen then, you're all, that's a fight for work. You're all, that's a fight one another to get your book into that fella. And if your face didn't fit, you never got the job. It was simple as that.
It was hard up. It was just a black shed. The shed. Gas light. No ventilation or nothing. And when you had a high tide, it used to get flooded. And you had to go and stand there in the gas light. And sometimes the lights would go out, so they'd have to light candles to wire us in the winter mornings.
In 1947, the National Dock Labour Scheme gave the dockers some protection, but it wasn't until 1967, after an all-out strike, that casual labour was ended for good. Work was shared fairly between registered dock workers on a rota system. They were all on the same rate of pay, with differentials for special skills, and if there were no ships to load or discharge, you still got paid, albeit on a lower rate. But containerisation came in, and roll-on, roll-off ferries. Fewer men were needed, and the employers wanted rid of the scheme. The new technology should mean lower labour costs. They found a willing ally in Margaret Thatcher, and in 1989, the National Dock Labour Scheme was abolished. The dockers went on strike to defend it, despite the hesitation of their union, the Transport and General Workers. Without decisive leadership, the strike crumbled in port after port. Only Liverpool stood firm, desperate to defend their hard-won security, but the T&G had called off the strike everywhere else.
We're just looking after the people in Liverpool now. Everyone else has deserted us, so we'll look after our own.
We are disgusted over it. But that union is through the towel, and we're not going to throw the towel in yet until we get a proper deal.
Then the General Secretary of the union, Ron Todd, addressed a meeting in Liverpool and persuaded the men to go back to work. It was not a happy meeting.
It's all down the river. I think it's a case of having too many times. But it may be a fight for another day.
They're not worth a balloon. I'm not even a face balloon.
The port employers welcomed today's vote, but insisted that any rebels who refused to return to work would still face the sack.
I'm afraid so, because we do not, in a port, issue idle threats. We're not issuing threats, please get me wrong. We're issuing what we believe is a fair contract. If men do not want to take up that contract, that is their decision. But we're not threatening anybody.
And so the strike was lost, and the National Dock Labour Scheme was abolished. It was to mean the end of job security for port workers, but the employers were made up.
They had what we'd call a sweetheart agreement with the union. They were literally in bed with the union. That's all I've got to say.
Yeah, the dock company had always indicated that they could work with the union. I mean, they still say it today. We ain't got a problem with the Transport and General Workers Union. The people we have a problem with is the elected representatives. And unfortunately, we've got a problem with the Transport and General Workers Union, you know, because we can't work with the official, or the official can't work with us.
Norman Fowler, Secretary of State for Employment, said in April 1989, the employers had given an assurance that after abolition of the National Dock Labour Scheme, there will be no return to casual employment.
The casual system was implemented immediately in all of the major ports, or all of the ports indeed, except Liverpool. And then just locally, we had the directors of Mersey Docks and Harbour Company assured us upon the return to work, that was one of the guarantees that we needed before we would return, that there would be no return to casual labour within the port of Liverpool. We got that assurance, but it's back, it's alive, it's kicking in the port at the moment.
But at the same time, though, Bob, when we were given assurances of the Mersey Docks and Harbour Company will never use any casual labour, the way he got round that was, we started finding small stevedore companies getting set up, and these involved Mersey Docks and Harbour Company directors, and they were 51% owned by the Mersey Docks and Harbour Company. So, and then we found out our work was getting siphoned off to companies who employed casual work, but Mersey Docks and Harbour Company don't employ them. The only little man who does. And that's how they done it.
So, for example, we had 50 or so dock workers employed at Pandoro dealing with Irish traffic, and then we lost those jobs because the company said, we want to privatise it. And we were saying quite simply, well, that's dock work, historically dock work, and there's no reason to privatise it. When we met with the Pandoro management, they said, well, we can pay dockers half the wages. We can get people in to do your job for half the wages, and we've got every right to do it, and we intend to do it.
The evils of casual labour began to reappear. Under the counter deals, no sick pay, no holiday pay, no pensions. Then, another blow. In 1993, a new contract was imposed on the dockers working at the container terminal. Overtime was abolished. Instead of regular shifts, they had to work 114 hours in 3 weeks. This meant in practice that the men could be summoned by phone at any time of the day or night at short notice to work shifts of up to 12 hours. Wages were drastically reduced. For management, this was the flexibility they wanted. For the men, it was almost unworkable. Stress levels were very high. Something had to give. And it happened in one of the so-called independent stevedoring companies, Torside. On the 25th of September, 1995, a group of their workers was asked to work overtime. No problem. The ship had to sail at night. It had previously been agreed that overtime would be paid in 2 hourly blocks. This time they were told they would only get 1 hour at a time. They went to see the boss, Mr. Bradley.
Now the men, I think there was 25 in total at the ship, moved over towards the canteen area awaiting Mr. Bradley. And five went into the canteen and the others just congregated outside smoking and having a chit-chat and whatever. Well, when Mr. Bradley arrived at the Canada, he just walked straight into the canteen and the five men sitting down, he just said, "You're sacked. The five of you sacked. Go on. I don't want yous anymore." So they just all gobsmacked. And so when the 18 outside said, "What's going on?" He said, "Well, he hasn't even asked us what's happening." He said, "Just said we're sacked." And he said, "Well, we're not going back to work if yous have been sacked for nothing." So one of them actually run over to Mr. Bradley before he got back in his car and said, "What's happening?" He said, "Them men are sacked." He said, "And if yous don't get back to work, you're sacked as well."
The other Torside men refused to go into work until their colleagues were reinstated. So they were all sacked by the manager, Bernard Bradley. They stood at the main entrance to the docks. They asked other dock workers to support them by not going in. This was their picket line, and of course, no Liverpool docker worth his salt would cross it, and none did.
No police presence, no activity whatsoever. They were encouraged to set that picket line up. The following week after we were dismissed, the police were there then, but not during the week when...
329 dock workers were sacked for showing their solidarity with the Torside men. Their employer, the Mersey Docks and Harbour Company, were legally entitled to dismiss them because refusing to cross a picket line put the dockers in breach of their contract. It all seemed to happen so very neatly.
What the dock company done was introduce their plan then, and the 329 men that worked in Seaforth containers and timber, they issued 200 contracts out of those 329 men, hoping that 200 men would sign an individual contract and turn into work on Monday morning, which was the cut-off period. And that's what the Mersey Docks and Harbour Company done. That was the tactic that they took as a result of us not crossing the picket line.
Well, it was traumatic, really, because you had to make a decision. You had to, like, say, shall I give all these pension rights up? Maybe, like, you know, a lump sum and I'm in the twilight of my life, 50-odd, or... I had no choice. I'm deemed as middle-aged, but I've still got so many years left in me. So my attitude is to fight for my job. But, you know, good enough, the men stuck together and decided that not only was it a fight for the future of the lads in Torside, but also the future of the sons coming onto the job, or the youth of Merseyside. And I think they just decided that someone has got to make a stand against these employers who were just sacking people willy-nilly, personal contracts, and if you don't like them, replacement labour force. I just think, like, here, the men decided, no, we're gonna have a go here.
If they wish to have to come back in to work with Mersey Docks, they have to apply, making use of the application forms that we've sent them.
Same terms and conditions?
Not necessarily. They will be judged in accordance with the requirements that we have, along with the other 1,000+ who have applied for jobs.
Because the suspicion is that this is a ruse by management to employ fewer people, more casual labour, on worse terms and conditions.
If this was a ruse by management, we would have created the dispute.
But apart from this, there was two superintendents of the Mersey Docks and Harbour Company who asked these young Torside lads who actually work overtime. All they said to them two superintendents, are we under the correct rate of overtime? Those superintendents said, no, we're only going to pay you an hour's overtime. So those young people refused to work. They refused to work, and quite correctly so. Now then, it was then that Torside employer came in and dismissed them all. So I would say that he did engineer it. There was two superintendents of the Mersey Docks and Harbour Company who were responsible for what happened.
Hello, Mr. Leatherbarrow. Hello, I'm ringing to see if the company will be interviewed for our film and if we have permission to film on the docks. see. Obviously, we're extremely anxious to include the point of view of the Mersey Docks and Harbour Company in the film.
A contract issued by one of the agencies supplying labour to the port said, "The rate is £4 an hour, all hours. If you don't work, you don't get paid. No guaranteed work. No holiday pay or sick pay for 3 months." The dispute is nearly a year old. The dockers and their families are now up against it. Real hardship. Struggle to put food on the table and to pay the mortgage. The union, the TNG, says they can't do much because of all the trade union legislation. But the women have got organised. Women of the waterfront. And this is the second international conference of the dispute. Not bad for a group of shop stewards who had to build an organisation from scratch.
And that internationalism creates a very serious situation. All the Merseys have to have a copy, but it has their financial position. And it's always a pleasure for me to speak to international companies, no matter which country they come from.
Okay, it's very good to be back here again and see you all. I'm amazed to see you in such a good spirit after 11 months of struggle. That's very heartwarming. I can tell you what we've done in Sweden. We have a blockade of all goods coming to or going to Liverpool. And in Gothenburg, they've been running a 12-hour delay on all the ACL vessels. And like in my port in the port of Stockholm, we're running a campaign for 1 hour pay each week for the Liverpool doctors. And the turnout has been really good. And I'm having another check, I'm going to hand over to Jimmy later on.
I don't mean to, but the speeches have been fantastic. But Jim Donovan's made the one true statement: if a law's bad, you fight it. We can't hide behind them. We've done one thing wrong in our disputes. We refuse to cross a picket line, and I'm proud of that. It's nothing great, it's nothing any exceptional, it's just an honesty that we refuse to do in a fellow worker. So what I'd like off the delegates, and please don't be upset what I'm going to say, we want action. We don't want promises, delegates. We want action. Go away and do the business and make it that no one will ever pick on us again.
For sure, we are not here for tourism. We didn't take the plane for 7 hours, or like Jimmy, they took the plane for 30 hours to do tourism in Liverpool. We are here to first rebuild the solidarity and continue the fight for the Liverpool victory. Not for us, for you. And after that, if you win, every place in the world going to win. And that's the fact.
Dockers are potentially very strong. They have the economies of the various countries in their hands. They also face the same attacks. Job security and wage rates are under threat worldwide. It is natural they should support each other. International action has already hit the Mersey Docks and Harbour Company very hard. The biggest customers, Atlantic Containers, pulled out of the port after pressure from the American dockers, and £23 million were wiped off the company's share value.
The right-wing organisations that supported openly the abolition of the scheme, they were publicly saying it wasn't just about the terms and conditions of employment, it wasn't about pension schemes, it wasn't about just reducing wages, it wasn't just about introducing casual labour, it was about eradicating, doing away with the culture of dock workers, this culture that we all share in this room. They wanted to eradicate that culture and introduce a new culture to dock work that accepted the authority of the employer. A culture that accepted, you do this and you do this for this amount of pay. You do it for this amount of hours, for 12 hours, for 14 hours. And when you finish that, you'll do something else. And when we don't need you on Monday, you go home with no pay. And we'll call you back on Thursday and we'll pay you whatever we decide to pay. So obviously the threat is there for all of us.
Mais le but d'une action mondiale, c'est pour faire savoir à nos ennemis, puisque nous avons tous les mêmes ennemis, c'est leur faire savoir que nous sommes prêts à nous opposer à toutes les personnes malveillantes qui voudraient empêcher les gens de travailler et de faire leur travail, leur métier.
The main thing of this kind of action, because we it's to tell our enemy, because we all have the same enemy, to do something, to tell them to this fucking bastard that we are never gonna stand again an action against the dockers. It's a real translation, eh?
C'est pas tout à fait la vôtre.
Je doute.
In all, there has been solidarity action from dockers in 22 countries. ACL returned to Liverpool in July, but the company's half-yearly profit showed a 17.5% drop.
And finally,
This bottle of wine. C'est production du Toulon.
It's made in Toulon.
Et ils proposent de faire des bouteilles, c'est en train d'être fait à Toulon, avec écrit support the Liverpool Docker.
They're making the, you know, bottling wine and they're going to sell it with a ticket on, saying support the Liverpool Dockers.
Pour financer l'aide au combat des Dockers de Liverpool.
Monday, the 9th of September. Dock workers and women of the waterfront are going to Blackpool. Not for a day out, but to go to the TUC conference, looking for cash for the hardship fund, and better still, respect for their picket line. At least they expect to make their voice heard in the main hall.
We're going down to Blackpool to lobby the TUC, because as you know, we've been a year in dispute. And all men, some of them have paid their union dues for 42, 43 years. And they should be supporting us. That's what trade unionism is all about.
Do you want me good side?
So you've been on.
Well, we've been sacked. We're not in an industrial dispute. We've been sacked. Locked out. We've been locked out for 11 months now, yeah?
Right.
And we're on our way to the TUC, you know, the Blackpool Conference.
No, didn't
know. Because there's been a complete blackout, you know, media blackout. So we're going up there now to obviously to try and highlight it. And I say get as much support as we can.
Support the dockers now! Support the trade union movement! That's what the dockers are doing!
It would appear that the address on the dock situation is going to be left till the end of the week. Jack Adams is going to speak on it, but they pushed it back to the end of business at the end of the week.
It's a typical manoeuvre. We anticipated that we'd get our say at the TUC this morning on the first day, which is obviously why the crowd is here. And then there's been a movement over the weekend, and we will not now be able to make a presentation to the TUC until Thursday or Friday at the earliest. And obviously, round about that time, your delegates at conference are busting a gut to get home.
We're still here!
No, we're still here!
We're still here!
Stop! 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 Stop
to be here, and it's down to you to make sure that Bobby Morton, Jimmy Nolan, or one of us women can get up and rep, speak for ourselves, because no one can speak on our behalf.
Sure.
You don't know how I feel when I'm lying in bed at night wondering where tomorrow's dinner's coming from. And you don't know how it feels when your son tells you to sell his bike so you can pay the electricity bills. And we have an absolute right to a doctor to go home with that rostrum and represent us. And we are standing alone in it, isn't it right?
Okay. Otherwise, our illusions are shattered at unions. Okay. We really need
I'll be at the meeting tonight. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry. I've lost Irene's bag. Irene will kill me. I've lost her book.
No, you haven't. Mary found
it. They go to every meeting they can to argue their case. Bill Morris is due to speak about Europe.
Could I just, for the benefit of those who might have missed the Guardian pages this morning, put on record the fact that my union is not anti-Europe. We believe in the European ideals in its widest political context, but we also believe that the debate should be an informed one. We also believe that we should know the price. It should, in fact, seek the consent of the British people in a referendum, and that's our contribution to the debate for starters.
Please. I'm also representative of the women's group from the Mersey Docks and Harbour Company. And there's a lot of European money being ploughed into Mersey Docks and other companies. Now, I understand that European money is to create jobs. And I'd like someone to explain to me how Mersey Docks and Harbour Company can get loads of European funding and sack 500 men. So has anybody got any answers to me, please?
Yes, to me. Can I just say to you that I regard the behaviour of the Mersey employers there as totally unacceptable, absolutely totally unacceptable, and cannot be justified under any terms. And I hope that a Labour government, in circumstances where that happened, would immediately be seeking to have discussions with such employers and making sure that that cannot possibly happen.
What about the law?
Right. Thank you very much. Now, we've had enough. I'm sorry.
I asked him about the anti-trade union law. That's my government going to come in office, and he hasn't told me whether he's going to repeal the anti-trade union laws.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you
very much.
Total waste of time.
You've said there, I think it's a disgrace.
I do, yeah.
We're all Labour voters. Yeah. Everyone says it's a disgrace, yet none of you, not one, come out and said, we're not having this. We represent working people and we're not having this. Mersey Docks and Harbour, can you reinstate those people now? None of you have done it.
Well, first of all, when we get into power, and I know this doesn't help you at the moment, but you know, I can only make promises and commitments which I can deliver. I mean, you won't want anything else. When we get into power, this kind of dispute will simply not be allowed to happen.
Why repeal the trade union legislation?
Well, as what I said earlier,
Tony Blair said he will not alter the trade union legislation.
No, he hasn't said that.
He said it in Hong Kong.
Yes,
he did.
He hasn't said that. I'm the employment one of the employment spokesmen.
What I'm saying to you is, don't insult the intelligence of the working class. Because you're so busy courting Middle England and the middle vote.
Yep.
But people are so
That's
fed up
point.
Of Tory
That's
rule.
A separate point.
The meeting between the stewards and the women of the waterfront and Bill Morris, General Secretary of their union, finally takes place at 5 o'clock. Some remembered an earlier meeting when Morris came to address the dockers in Liverpool just before Christmas in 1995.
All claims that Liverpool's sacked doctors have been deserted by their trade union dismissed with a rapturous welcome for General Secretary Bill Morris. At a meeting before hundreds of doctors that held behind closed doors, he voiced a determined fight for their reinstatement. Of course, he said they'd have the support of thousands.
The employers may starve our bellies, but they will never break our spirits. That's what I said this morning, and that's the sentiments of the doctors.
This meeting is also behind closed doors, but we were able to hear what they were saying.
Don't leave us in isolation and certainly don't starve us back in somewhere for the sake of not getting money off the transport and getting away from the unit.
Well, that's all we can do. I mean, we can only do what we can, can't we? I don't think that there is anything that's been said here which hasn't been said before.
They come out with a flimsy excuse by saying it's the fabric of the union, the law. We know, we've been outside the law for 12 months. The law says we must cross the picket line. We didn't cross the picket line, and that's why. And that's what's happening to us.
Well, Bill Morris actually stood up and we videoed him saying it. I won't see the Liverpool dock workers starve. They'll never starve in my eyes.
I am here to say to you that whatever happens, our spirit will never be broken and our bellies will never be starved. They no longer see colleagues as your struggle. They see it as their struggle. Because, comrades, you in Liverpool will never ever walk alone.
And today, when we're on our hands and knees begging, pleading with them for money, it's all as though it was all fabrication. You know, he's saying, I'll continue and I'll do what I can. But people are starving and there's no ifs and buts about it.
Because solidarity is something that you owe to each other and you give to each other.
Well, it's so sad.
Yeah.
It really is sad. We have to ask, you know, we have to go on our knees to ask our own union to help us.
Bill Morris was, of course, asked to give his view of the dispute. He replied, "The strike in Liverpool docks is unofficial and still continuing. In these circumstances, it would be inappropriate for me to be officially involved." But it was the action of another union official that was a bigger mystery. Jack Dempsey is the Liverpool docks officer of the Transport and General Workers Union and responsible for the handling of the dispute. It now appears he withheld vital information that would have prevented it happening in the first place. In his evidence to the House of Commons, Bernard Bradley, the Tawside employer, wrote, "At that point, I conceded to Jack Dempsey that to stop the strike, the five men dismissed could be reinstated." And Jack Dempsey said that he would go out to the men and see what he could do. But, and this is what's odd, Jack Dempsey appears not to have told a soul. Not the Tawside lads, not the shop stewards, not anyone.
He has everyone's phone number and his file of fax he carries. And there, lo and behold, in front of him were 500 dock workers, and he had the secret buttoned up that the five Tawside lads had been reinstated. And he never told a mass meeting. We had another mass meeting, he never told that mass meeting.
And it's so hard for our people to comprehend that this dispute should never have happened and wouldn't have happened if Jack Dempsey had imparted the knowledge that he had.
Why didn't he inform at least the labour force that the five Tawside lads were reinstated and really there was no need for the dispute? So it's gross negligence on the part of a CNG officer.
It can't be negligence.
That's the way it's put down in the book. I could call it something else. Evil. Mean? I'd call it evil.
Hello, is that Jack Dempsey's secretary? It's to find out whether or not he is going to do an interview for us.
All right, I'll leave that with
Mr.
Dempsey for you.
Thanks a lot.
Okay,
bye-bye.
There's been no response from Mr. Dempsey. 23rd of September, 1996. Dock workers from Canada, France, Sweden and Denmark go to Antwerp with Mike Carden and Terry Teague to get support from the Belgian Union. Antwerp is a key port in the dispute, and the Belgians had missed the last conference.
Liverpool docks have been taken over by this part-time casual workers.
All the dock workers, from the young dock workers to the old dock workers, including the foreman, they all got sacked in Liverpool.
That's very dangerous. That's very dangerous. And when they're doing that kind of work with casual labor in Liverpool, then I say the amount of accidents must be pretty high.
Yeah. Talking to the dock workers here in Antwerp, it's that they've still got a pride in their job. And that's how it used to be in Liverpool. You could be a good trade unionist and still have a pride in the job you were doing.
I think also here in transition is not only the 3 week schooling you get, but when you are a candidate dock worker, you start as a candidate dock worker, you come into a team. It's teamwork. At the first, you come into a team, and everybody who is in the team, who has a long time at the docks, is concerned about you. Is watching out for you.
Yeah,
is calling your names and everything.
It's so important because the situation now in Liverpool is with the scabs in there. The stories we hear is that there's no communication, that they're isolated, they work by themselves, they don't work in a team, they don't communicate, they don't have dinner with each other, or there's no sort of fraternity there, because they're doing a job of work for the employer, they're breaking the strike, and so there's no dignity in that, there's no respect.
Ole, Bjorn, everybody was speaking about the fact that if the Liverpool Dockers win, it's going to be an international Dockers victory. If they lost, probably the company are going to do the same thing or going to try to do the same thing everywhere.
The Dockers are meeting Bob Bater, head of the union in Antwerp. They want some support on the International Day of Action on September the 30th.
That'll be the next. Then what we do? Are we organize ourselves as the employer already organized, or are we going to continue to stay in our home country and try to say that we are the better one in the world? I don't think it's the better way. We have a big timing, and the Liverpool Dockers do a pretty good job for that. And that's why we're here tonight, Bob.
Okay, thank you.
Throughout our history, we realized that international links and international actions in between Dockers are very, very important. And the English Dockers has always supported us when we needed support. And therefore, it was very natural for us to try to support the Liverpool Dockers as soon as we heard about their situation.
If we succeed in making a victory in Liverpool, then I can look at the future much more bright. But if the Liverpool Dockers will be defeated, I know every time somebody speaks on international solidarity, people would say, look at Liverpool, what happened?
It's very hard for us to attack. Very hard, the ship companies here in Antwerp, and have the chance that they disappear day by day, as I can say it, to Rotterdam. I have to be honest, people, they say, do we have to support the shop stewards of Liverpool or the decisions of the TNGWU? Oh, that's very principled.
EGWU want the scab to continue to work in the port of Liverpool. That's the big problem, man. That is the big fucking problem. You have 500 family who suffer since 1 year, and they do sweet fuck all about that. They still have their home, their big chair, TG Bill Norris. I never saw him, but he have a big chair and everything is good for him. ITF, everything is good. I do sticker, I put the sticker, I do my job. Why ITF are keeping away the Liverpool struggle? Politics. And I'm not here to speak about politics, I'm here to speak about 500 family who are out since last year, since a year. And you was in struggle in the last year probably. You know what it is to be in struggle for a month, for 2 months, for 3 months, for 6 months, 1 year. 1 year. I was in struggle for 3 weeks last year, and after 3 weeks my doctor said, good thing that we signed. 1 year out.
I will strongly support your action, and I will give you my word tonight that we will delay the most important ships in Zeebrugge and Antwerp.
But the word was broken. Bob Bater wrote to Bill Morris, and Bill Morris wrote to Bob Bater. The result was that Antwerp did nothing, despite Bob Bater's promise.
Liverpool, the 30th of September. A mass picket to mark the anniversary of the dispute. Dockers in many countries took action against shipping lines still using Liverpool and its strike-breaking workforce. In Sweden, every ACL container was boycotted. In three Danish ports, work came to a halt. In France, a vessel was delayed for 16 hours, and in Australia, another was delayed for 24 hours. In Canada, there was a work to rule. In all cases, dockers put their own jobs on the line to support their Liverpool colleagues.
Once again, and I never get fed up saying at AC Delco, the £500 has now become £1,000. But donations come in daily. A lady named Mrs. Baines, I think we've let letters out to you before, sends us donations on a regular basis, £5 and £10, and put inspirational letters in with that donation. No address, she's a Liverpool. We found out from the latest letter that her husband was a Liverpool docker. Sent to us this time, and I mean, it's amazing, telling us that she had a pair of sovereign earrings that she didn't wear. So she sold them for £55 and sent the £55 to us. And, you know, when you see people, and a lot of people who are unemployed, sending donations, £5 and £10, and saying, you know, we're willing you to win, you know, obviously recognising the struggle that you are involved in, tremendous struggle that you have been involved in for 12 months. We do recognise the hardships that you're going through and the suffering that your families are going through. We expect a solution to the dispute and an ending to the dispute. And for people who think that that's not what your stewards want, are sadly mistaken. We want an end to the dispute, and the quicker the better. It's gone on far too long as far as we're concerned.
Well, I found it impossible as an advice worker of 13 or 14 years not to be moved by the dignity and the commitment of the men and women in this dispute. It's really hard not to be touched, because they understand totally the consequences of what they're involved in, and there are people who will lose their homes if the dispute continues for too much longer. Well, I think that we'll probably see the first repossession, I would say, around Christmas or just after Christmas if things go on.
What really touches you as well is people coming, the SVP, coming with parcels for you from the Harvest Festival, things like that. You find out who your friends are, really, and that's the only thing. And we're all proud. None of us will tell one another. But it'll come out in different things and say, oh, yeah, you know, we've had to put an insurance policy in or something like that.
We sort of lived off our savings because he'd, like, 28 years working on the docks. Wherever he worked before that, he's... you know, not ever being unemployed or...
I mean, after 12 months, you know, you're looking and thinking, this is so unfair over such an engineer. It was an engineer dispute, to see families having to face losing their homes, and some are men and women who've saved for their life, you know, for their old age, using their savings.
I've got, like, it must be nearly 300 years of dock heritage. That's, like, my husband's father, my father, my grandfather, uncles, you know. And to see that one man can just sack 500 men.
We, you know, appealed to the directors' wives because we thought, you know, they know what it's like to run a home. Surely to God they understand. And these women said that through... Leather Barrow, that they didn't want to become involved. I think that's very, very sad. So they're sat in their homes like gangsters' moles, or, you know, the fictional mafia wives. They don't care where the money's coming from as long as it's rolling in, because they don't want to become involved. You know, well, I've been married 25 years and I want to be involved in everything my husband's involved in. I want to know what he's doing. and he wants to know what I'm doing. Isn't that what married life is all about? You share your lives. And if my husband was doing, even contemplating doing what their husbands have done, I'd have an awful lot to say about it, and I'm sure I wouldn't still be living with him now.
I just feel like going to bed on Christmas Day. I just feel like going to bed on Christmas Day, because there's not going to be anything this Christmas. Yeah. You know, last year was like one thing. I'm not even thinking about it.
No, I haven't given it a thought.
You know, but when you go in a shop or you have to pass a shop, you're going, you know, you can't do these things anymore. And it's not because it's us, because there's always been people on benefits. Mm. There's always been people who've got nothing. But to have it forced on you and done to you within hours, I don't know how they can live with themselves, because I just think, you know, they're all right. They can go home and get on with their lives. We go home and I'm too tired to speak to my children sometimes, because I'm so drained of what's happening, not just to me, to everyone you're involved with. You know, you can see the strain, the stress, and you say to yourself, what can we do? When's it gonna, you know, when is it gonna end? When are that dog company gonna say, God, look what we've done to these people, and they have given all of their lives to this firm.
And made bloody millions on their backs.
Yeah. It's just the injustice of it, this social injustice, and it isn't just the Dockers, it's happening everywhere. And I'm always aware of that. It's not feeling sorry for you, it's feeling sorry for the future generation. You're trying to teach your children, do well in school, do this, do that, and what's going to be at the end of it? A casual job with low pay, ill health, no future for their children. You know, that's what it's all about.
The sole purpose of getting rid, or two reasons, of getting rid of the Liverpool Dockers was first because they are the last bastion of the trade unions in the dock areas in Britain, number one. And secondly, to increase their profits. That's what it was about.
I feel like you can only be trodden on so much before you start fighting back. I don't want to be working 12. I don't want my children working 12 hours. I don't want my children trodden on. I want my children to have a bit of respect.
Well, it's simply about an injustice, a total injustice of good men. And I mean good men. You've given the life to the dock industry to be just cast aside by somebody who's motivated by profit. It's about removing them scabs from my job. And it's about the biggest injustice that's happened in the labour movement since I can remember. And people should be rallying behind it. They should be grasping this and rallying behind the Liverpool Dockers so to make sure that they do win.
If they lose, everything we fought for is gone. Everything that we... The small advances we made over the years, which we did, see, is gone. Everything's wiped out if they lose.
But now these men are stuck outside that gate, and there's trade unionists going through the gate. I'm not talking about the scabs, I'm talking about drivers, lorry drivers and what have you, going through that gate. And they're so-called trade unionists. And they're all out, and they're all outside the industry, just watching how it's going on. And don't worry, in time, it's going to happen to them.
And this place is going to boom once again. Don't worry about it. And that's why the dock companies don't want you back in there. The answer is for us to stick together. We've been out 12 months. If it takes a little bit longer, let's stick it out. Through the pride and dignity that is about for that 12 months. And let's go back in united and solid. Victory to the European Dock.